Blog Talk Radio.
This is Merle with Merle, and I'm your host, Merle Exit. Well, I'm here in New York City. It's 1:30 in the afternoon. It's a cloudy day. It's about close to, I don't know, somewhere in the 60s. And I'm indoors. I don't care. And, well, we're going to southern Vermont for this show. Hit a couple of places. First place we're going to is in the area of Manchester. Actually, both are in the area of Manchester. Going to go with Hildene. It's the former home of Robert Todd Lincoln, the son of Abraham and Mary. And a lot of significance is there. And we're going to have Paula Maynard come on and tell us about that. And then we're going to get a little more tour of some more interesting places that maybe I haven't yet written about, from Berta Magnus from the Tourism Office. And, well, hopefully we'll all go up to southern Vermont afterwards. So, well, Paula, you're on the air.
I am.
Yeah.
Do you hear me, Merle?
Yes, I hear you.
Good, good. Well, how can I help you? What can we talk to the folks about?
Well, let's first you get to introduce yourself. Tell what's your position over at Hildene.
Okay, well, I should introduce myself by saying I had never worked for a nonprofit before. It's the best of all worlds, but you do several things. So in my capacity here, I am the press director. I am also the group tour director, and I am the coordinator of about 120 wonderful volunteers.
Wow.
That's what I do.
Well, let's
yes.
See if we could take us on a tour. Where do we begin?
Well, actually, everything begins here at the Welcome Center, which, of course, is located in the Lincoln's original carriage barn. And it was restored in 2007 to the lovely state that it's in now. But in their day, it was their carriage barn for their horses and carriages. And Robert designed it knowing that there would eventually be a car there. And he was a Packard man. So ultimately, he built a small garage in front of the Welcome Center. The second floor was used for staff. And when you're in the store shopping, which is also our museum store, you'll see all kinds of displays, beehives, things that we do on property. You'll notice the stalls have been turned into sections like children's materials, and everything in the store is related to our mission, values, and to action. So it's a really exciting stop. That is the first place, whether you are someone who walks in to Hildene or whether you arrive on a coach. Either way, that's the first stop you make, and that's where you learn all about where you can go from there.
I understand there's a couple of videos to watch, too.
There are two videos. One is an introductory video that talks a bit about the family, its history here. Also shows you wonderful photographs of what the house looked like before it was restored to what it looks like now. And we just added the Pullman Car Sunbeam a few years ago, so there's also a second video now that tells the story of the restoration of the 1903 Pullman Car Sunbeam, kind of like a history documentary of the type you'd see on the History Channel, a very high-quality documentary.
So what those is two the things story are, with the Pullman?
Well, the Pullman
how
car,
does it relate
Robert
to
was,
this?
How does it relate to Hildene?
Yeah.
Well, Robert was president of the Pullman Palace Car Company for many years, and he was president of it actually at the time when it was the largest manufacturing company in the world. And so when the Friends of Hildene, took Hildene over many, many years ago, more than three decades ago, they were very interested in having a Pullman car, but it's a very expensive venture, and they weren't ready for it until just a few years ago. It also had to be a particular Pullman car. It had to come off the line during Robert's presidency. Not every car has come off the line in about 1903 to 1905. So it was a countrywide search for exactly the right car. And being wooden, it would have to also be able to be restored. So it took quite a long time to find the car, and then over 4 years and over $1 million to restore it to what it is now. What is most exciting to me as a former teacher is that while we do talk about the restoration of the car, briefly out at the car when people go there, we really, our exhibit out there is about the 100 years between the Emancipation Proclamation and the Civil Rights Movement, say around 1963, and Pullman Company sits right about in the middle of that movement. So it's fascinating to look at President Lincoln, the Emancipator, his son, the president of the Pullman Palace Car Company that hired the porters, and then the leaders of the porters that come out of that become civil rights leaders themselves in many cases. So the whole exhibit out of the Pullman car is designed to show you what we've done and also to encourage people to talk about issues that they often don't want to, and it causes them to have civil discourse, which is one of our goals, to get people to talk again about things and to listen to each other. So that's what that exhibit's about.
I understand it played a part in a black middle class.
Yes, it did. What happened was, it's kind of a paradox, Merle, because what we have here is these black men working for a company that, of course, his job is their bottom line, so they're exacting a lot of hours, not a lot of sleep, and very often living off of their tips. However, it was an opportunity to ride to various places around the country, which they wouldn't normally have had, to make a living that allowed their families to begin to have education, et cetera, in communities. And they were actually leaders in their community supporters. But it wasn't easy. It was a hard job. So the paradox is sort of, if they hadn't done it, they probably wouldn't have had the opportunity that they ended up having, which was became the beginning of the black middle class. But by the same token, there were injustices involved in it too. So that's what makes it such an interesting exhibit, because it causes people to think about history in a different way, and also about how sometimes things that don't look so good end up being something that was necessary to move things along. So that's giving too many hints, but what we ask people to do is actually talk about it, and they record their thoughts on a blackboard, because there are three voices out there. There's the voice of the company, the corporate part of it. There's the voice of the porters, the people who worked it. There's the voice of the wealthy who rode in those days, people like the Vanderbilts. And then there's our voice as a people. When we look back on this, what are our thoughts about it? And people record them out there. And eventually all of that will be on iPads, and so we'll be able to have people communicate with each other, whether they're here or not. So it's very exciting. And it's on the African American Heritage Trail, which Vermont has just instituted about 2 years ago. So we're very excited about it.
So now let's go to the house.
Okay, let's go to the house. So the fun part about the house is that it's at the core. It's the easiest place to see why we're called Hildene. And because I just welcomed two coaches today, I'm fresh from explaining that to them, and I always get a ha-ha when I do it. Hildene became named Hildene because when Robert was ambassador to England, which was called Minister of the Court of St. James's at the time, but an ambassadorship nevertheless, he heard these two old English words, H-I-L meaning hill, and D-E-N-E meaning valley with stream. And he recalled that when he came to see this property, began to put the property together in 1903, and as time passed and he saw where it was and decided where he was going to place his house, he places it on a very high peak on the land. And when he looks out to the west, he sees the Taconic Mountain Range, which rises up through Massachusetts and New York, ends here in Manchester with the highest peak, Mount Equinox. He looks to his east and sees the beautiful Green Mountains of Vermont, which, of course, run up the center of our beautiful state. And wherever you have two ranges, you're bound to look down from where you're situated, and you'll see a river. That river here happens to be the Battenkill River, a famous fly fishing river, which is how the Orvises got here. And that river empties into the Hudson in New York eventually. So Hill and Valley with Stream is what he named this, with his wife Mary, this beautiful home. And it's the perfect description. It helps people to remember what that word means. That leads us to the house. So the house is called Hildene, the whole estate, which is now 412 acres of the original 531. The house is the cornerstone of it, obviously. It would have been called a cottage in those days, similar to the homes, say, on the in Rhode Island, Newport, places like that. They called them cottages, but it's a 24-room cottage. And it's unique, I think, Merle, because I've been to many other, including the Vanderbilt's home. I call it simply elegant because it really was designed for, by Robert and Mary, to be their home away from home, if you will. That's why the driveway is so long. That's why there's so many gardens. There's places for the kids to play because it was their intention that it be a respite for their family, not the kind of social beings they had to be in Chicago or Washington, D.C. So the home itself is somewhat simple. You walk into a center hall where the player organ is, the Aeolian organ, and of course all of our guests listen to that be played. And the songs come from his original collection of music. They were all musicians, Robert, his wife, and the children. So there's also a Steinway in the adjacent parlor. And then you see the dining room right off the center hall where the family would have dined, and they did frequently because while the Lincolns had three children to begin with, one of the joys of their life, their one son, Jack, passed away in his teenage years. And so the daughters went on to have families, and they were frequently at Hildene with their parents. So there's a feeling of having children around. And then you have in the wing next to the dining room all of the staff. That's the staff area where the kitchen would have been and the pantry, and it's filled with all sorts of gadgets you would have used in those days. And they also did some farming themselves and later on had someone farm their land. The other wing of the house houses Robert's library, where he would have conducted Pullman business when he was even in Vermont, and his secretary's office, and the room where he died. He died here at Hildene in his sleep. And then on the second floor, when you go up the stairs to the second floor, you see the 1,000 pipes that the music is piped from the organ through, so that's quite spectacular. And then upstairs is Mary's sitting room with an incredible view of the garden below, which is designed to look like a stained glass window, with the privets being the lead and the flowers in it being the glass. You also visit Mary's bedroom with a beautiful view. But most importantly, we typically have a Lincoln exhibit, and we have that currently right now. It's about Lincoln's second inaugural address, a very powerful one where he is really speaking to the North and the South about beginning to mend and build bridges. And we feel that's a pretty important message for these days as well. So that's all in the house, among other things. It's surrounded by beautiful gardens. There's an observatory that they had for stargazing. And views of the valley below, which we just recently were able to open this year. After all these years, that 100 acres is beginning to be used and turned back into agriculture. So that's a whole new story, a whole new page in the book of Hildene. Does that help?
let me ask you a question. With the gardens, is there a particular time of year that's most enjoyable to visit or picturesque?
Well, it's very popular. Actually, that's an excellent question, Merle, because most people assume summer. We have an incredibly busy late May and June visitation. We're open all year round, and spring is a great draw because the Lincolns planted peonies out there in that garden in the beginning. We have proof of that from delivery slips from the depot where the trains came in. They ordered their peony roots from Paris, France, and we have all those things. So we know that many of our peony plants are heirloom and go back over 100 years. And so those fill the entire garden with beautiful hues of pink and white, and in some cases there's some yellows, and an amazing scent that peonies just let off. So that's a very popular time, not only for people who love flowers, but garden clubs and people who are just interested in gardens in general. Then in the summer, those peonies go their way, and the perennials that are planted out there come into view in the stained glass window, and those are very popular as well. It's a popular scene after hours for weddings, and most brides do, and grooms and couples do their weddings in the at the promontory at the end of the formal garden. So It's maintained beautifully. The hedges, the privets are done a little bit at a time to look in pristine condition all the time, the way they would have looked back in 1907 and 8 when it was installed. So those are pretty spectacular all through the year. And in the wintertime, they are covered with snow, but typically over under the pergola, we have a Christmas tree lit, a little tree to remind us that we're here all year round. There's also a lesser known section of gardens, if I might comment on that. The gardens here were formal, but behind the Welcome Center is where the family spent a great deal of their time, and it's a much more informal set of gardens. And there you have a cutting garden where the garden flower ladies who design the floral arrangements for our house, they're volunteers, all from May through October, they design arrangements for the house, bringing flowers from their place and cutting from our garden. And next to that is a plant a row vegetable garden where our volunteers tend to a vegetable garden like the Lincolns would have had, but that food all goes to the food shelves, as much as 400 to 600 pounds a year. And next to that is a butterfly garden, a place where butterflies can do what they need to do in an environment that's safe for them, because we have a beautiful natural environment for pollinators and butterflies, and we're teaching and talking about that all the time. We also have a soft fruit and berry cage out back so that you, even though you can't see all of the plants that would have been growing when the Lincolns were here, you can go into that cage and sample the berries that are in season at that time. For example, blueberries, strawberries, when the apples come in. It's quite wonderful, and that sets out in that area as well. So there's lots of gardens for people who love things that are growing.
And I understand I missed the goat farm, huh?
You did. I think the goats are what missed out, because everyone had fun with you, Merle, for example. And the ladies at the farm were jealous because they didn't meet you. But, yes, that's an important thing, because one of the things we're doing here is we're trying to, we have a place, you know, obviously built at the turn of the century, and we don't want people to come here expecting us just to be living in the past century. We can't afford to do that. We have to be sustainable, and we have to be of interest to the next generation and the generation after that. And to do that, you have to have involvement and interaction. So when we decided to build a barn, we did not build a reenactment barn. We built a 21st century barn, and we got a grant to power it by solar. And it is backed up with a big wood furnace so we can teach about the importance of using renewable energy. And then we chose goats because Nubian goats, which originated from Africa, are actually very comfortable in this environment. And the person who is our farm manager had a long experience in making cheese, and that was her choice. So we have these wonderful, friendly, socialized Nubian goats because they're fed, they're bottle fed as soon as they're weaned from their moms, but also by our volunteers. And so they like people. So why I'm saying they would be disappointed you didn't come is that usually they get very upset. And so when you go out there, you not only see the goats and meet them in the first part of the barn, but then you see the milking operation. They're milked every day at noon, so people can watch that from behind glass. They can also watch the process of the cheese being made. And most of the cheesemaking season at this time of year, we're making fresh Chèvre, which is phenomenal soft goat cheese made weekly. And then in the, all throughout the year, we make an aged tome or Havarti from cheese. We make it from the goat's milk. We also collect cow's milk from local farmers in the winter to make cow's milk Havarti. And that is available in our Welcome Center. And we have it out for sampling typically during the foliage season. So that's what you missed at the farm. It's beautiful.
Oh, well.
Next time, Merle. Next time. I hope you come back.
Well, I got to the alpacas while I was up there, at least.
Oh, good, good. Yeah, they're wonderful, too. We used to have two llamas out with the goats because actually the animals in the woods don't know what alpaca and llamas are. So at that time, the llamas were like the early goat protectors, but they've gone on to another farm because they got older, so. We have the bucks out there instead, so the bucks are separated from the does. But it's a really wonderful experience. And children, you know, we live in Vermont, and everybody thinks you can visit the farms wherever you want, but you really can't because they're mostly working farms, which is what ours is too. So we do provide a lot of programming around goats and the fascinating tummy that they have. And we also do farm camps in the summer so that children can learn from farm to table where their food comes from, which is a good thing to know. So we do a lot with the farm.
Now, isn't I read something about the, there's a whole mission thing going on? Or
yeah, there
what's
is.
The...
Well, that's kind of related to what I was talking about earlier, which is that 13 years ago when our current president and vice president came to Haldane, most statistics were saying that house museums were in decline. And they were across the country. And so they had to make some dramatic moves with the support of a board of trustees who understood. And what they decided to do was absolutely use all 412 acres and not just rely on the house itself and a welcome center. And because we had such resources, we have river and meadow and mountain and wetlands, and we have a responsibility not only to preserve this and conserve the land, but to do something with it, to teach about the important elements in it. So then how do you do that and root that, and you're at the Lincoln site to boot, how do you do that and relate it to Abraham Lincoln? Well, it's easy because you look at Abraham Lincoln's ideals, honesty, integrity, perseverance, and civic responsibility, and that's easy to wrap your arms around because those are all values that we need to honor these days. But what we have done, because we have such a beautiful natural environment, is we've continued to do the history piece. But while doing the history piece, we are also branching out and using all of our 412 acres to talk about sustainable agriculture, to talk about the need to protect the honeybees because they're our pollinator population and they're under terrible duress, to talk about things like why are our monarchs disappearing, and to do butterfly workshop with children. We're also doing pieces on the wetlands, which is why we put a 600-foot boardwalk into the wetlands, I think last year was completed, to talk to people about the importance of wetlands and how they're sponge for the environment. And certainly floods have been reminding of this. And then talking about civil rights and civil discourse out at the Pullman car and renewable energy at the barn. So taking values and putting them into action, not just talking about them, but showing what we can do when we do actually adhere to those values. So that's kind of what we're doing with our mission. And everything must relate to it. If it doesn't come under the umbrella of the mission and the brand, we don't do it. So when you come into the store, I'll give you a good classic example for Lincoln lovers. When you come into the store, you will now see not 150 Lincoln titles. You will see 15 of the top Lincoln titles that our president would have personally read because he's a Lincoln aficionado himself. But you will also see equally amount of books on composting and forestation and conservation, and there'll be a whole kids section on knowing how to keep things green and other sections with topics that cause us to talk about civic discourse. So we're trying to be sustainable and move into the 21st century, causing people to think and in the end to try to figure out how they can try to make this world a better place. That's the goal.
Yeah.
And
if
some
you,
of our programming is around that, yes.
Mm-hmm. So if you're coming there, how much time would somebody expect or should spend if you're coming to
Well, help? Okay, well, I think what most people are starting to do is they're packing a picnic lunch, which they can enhance with food. We have a lot of Vermont product that's takeable on a picnic in the Welcome Center. And if it's a family and they like to walk, they can include all of the property up here and then do the round trip walk down to the meadows and see that boardwalk. And for that, they're probably going to need 3 to 4 hours to do everything, and it will involve some hiking. For those who want to strictly do the spot up on the hill, we think of the top part as the hill and the bottom part as the dean, the valley with the stream. But if you're going to spend the time up here on the hill, you can do it pretty comfortably in 2 to 2.5 hours. And if you want to do lunch, add that half an hour into that. We have picnic tables, and you can do that right behind the Welcome Center. It's about what the people really want to do, because you can also do it faster by just riding on our trams, which do a circular loop around the major venues. Or some people want to walk it. They want to go through our woods on our interpreted trails. We have 12 miles of trails. So I think it varies on what the person would like to do. I would say I would never try to do it in less than an hour and a half, even if people were riding on the trams, because when they're finished, they're going to want to sample the food in the Welcome Center and spend some time shopping. So 2 is pretty much more ideal, I would say, for shortening it.
When you say
just
sample.
To see the house, just to see the house, you could probably do in an hour, but you don't want to just do the house anymore, really. You had a question. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Oh, I was going to ask, when you say sample the food in the Welcome Center, what people get it, there's no cafeteria, right?
No, there's no cafeteria now.
I mean, can you take food and bring it?
You can, yes, and we encourage people to bring a picnic if they want. And like I said, they can buy the things that go with it. We have wonderful jams and jellies and cookies and chips and everything Vermont. And then we have a sample station in the store where we put out our cheese and have people try different ways of eating it, maybe with some chutney or delicious ways I can't even describe on the phone because, unfortunately, I pass by that table way too many times in a day. But we have that out so that people can taste our cheese and other products that we sell. So that's what I meant by sampling. We try to do that for our guests.
Oh, okay. And I guess there's a lot of items both historic and to buy, right?
Oh, yes. There's I would say that the product in the store beyond Vermont food and our food, our cheese, would be related to the environment, to the forest, to Lincoln himself, everything from ties to bookmarks and things all about Abraham Lincoln. Then there's T-shirts and shirts that have sayings about the garden. We sell our own peony plant seedlings in the spring and summer. We sell the heirloom seeds from them. Anything that relates to butterflies, birds, peonies, flowers, it's anything that is relevant to Hildene is in that store, and it's a wonderful store. We get a lot of people that after they've been here to visit Hildene will either call and order from us or will come back and just do the store sometimes for Christmas or the holidays. So it's a wonderful place to be. And that's where the films are shown as well on a constant loop. We are currently working on a new film because we've added so much since that one was done. So we'll look forward to that in the next year or so.
What do you think it's going to be about, or what's the intention?
The new film will include people, of course, again, who are visiting. It will include the Pullman car, which is not a part of the original film because we didn't have it yet, nor is the farm. So the farm will be in it, and I'm sure the wetlands and the Dean below. We have a new farm in the Dean below, which has chickens and sheep and is agricultural in that we're beginning to grow all of our own food for our weddings and for corporate events that we do. We also have a pollinator sanctuary. So a lot of what's in that film will be what's been added in the last 5 or 6 years, which is a lot. So we're really looking forward to it. And the crew is filming. They were just here last week. They'll be filming at different points during the seasons as well. So to try to bring it up to current status. Very excited about that. It's a big project. You know, we're nonprofits, so we take projects on as we can do them.
Okay. So when people coming up to go skiing, if they're near what, Bromley, I guess? Bromley or
yes, we are. Well, our region is called the Shires of Vermont, and in the North Shire, which is the northern Manchester portion, the South Shire is Bennington. So I'm going to use that as a way to explain. Just south of us is the Berkshires, and there's Jiminy Peak in the Berkshires. And then if you come north, the first mountain you would see in Vermont would be outside of Manchester, and that's Bromley Mountain. If you were to come at it from the south into Bennington, you would probably see Mount Snow halfway across the state. And then if you hop back up in to north of Manchester and a little bit east, you would find Stratton Mountain. So there's really a lot of choices. There are also several cross-country ski areas, which is very popular in Vermont too. And we actually, in the wintertime, have a cross-country and ski and snowshoe rental center that people strap on their shoes or their skis and they go from venue to venue on the snow here.
Cool.
It's very popular in the winter to be able to do the whole site strapped on with snow. And if we have good snow, it's a great year. And our members, part of membership here is members can ski or snowshoe for free all season. So a lot of our families take advantage of our trails during the wintertime. They're very beautiful. So there's lots to do up here, lots to do. I love Vermont. I chose to live here, so I love it.
Berta is on, and she's going to talk about everything except Hildene now.
Well, Well, Berta and I share one wonderful thing. We live in our favorite part of the Shires, or I can say that. I live in Arlington, and we love Arlington, too. It's at the home of Rockwell, so it's a very unique, special place that Berta and I live in. Is she there now? Could she hear me?
I am.
Yes, she can hear
Hi,
you.
Hi, Berta.
I am. Hey, Paula, we don't see each other except on the radio. We're so
exactly.
busy.
Exactly. But it's always good.
Yeah, it is.
So,
it is.
We're very lucky to have Berta, Merle. Believe me. She's boundless energy.
Oh, yes, I know.
All good.
That's for sure.
I don't know if that applies, but you can't help but be energized by what's around you here. I mean, the foliage right sure. now is coming at you in 3D. It's distracting. It's so beautiful when you're driving.
Berta, don't you think the yellows and reds right now they're the most yellow and red I've seen in years. They're so vibrant.
I think
vibrant.
So, too. I think it's unbelievable, and it's not
it is
done.
Unbelievable.
You know, it's just
starting.
Better
yeah.
every day.
Yep, I agree.
It's better every day.
Yep.
So the 3 weeks I think it was 3-4 weeks ago, time goes
That
far.
You were here, Merle? Right.
Yeah. That the leaves are so different now?
Oh, my goodness. I mean, when you were here, I think we, saw a couple tinges because we were driving on the mountain, and we saw, just sort of little teaser leaves
right.
here and there. I mean, now I can't even describe to you what the palette is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
like Paula says, the reds and the yellows are just, really, they're just alive. It's just
yeah,
on fire. It's wonderful.
You know, it's really pretty. I don't know about you, but I know that all autumns are not equal. I know that sounds
no.
funny, but some are more vibrant than others. That's just part of nature. Did you have too much rain? Was it cold? For some reason, this foliage is like, it's just incredible, isn't it?
Well,
it's
I think
like,
it's like the three bears. This one is just right. I mean, it really
yeah.
is perfect.
Yeah, just rub it in.
Well, you
come
just have
up,
to come
bro.
On up and see it. That's all.
Yeah.
Well, I
you
know
just
that
you have to come back.
I'm sure we will. I know, Paula, you have to go, so I'm not gonna.
I do.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go on.
I'm
gonna
say goodbye.
I don't
going
to
meet
the bathroom
a bus.
Either.
No, she's
no,
gonna go
no.
and meet a bus of 30 or 40 people that are.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that. There's
through.
A lot of that going on. Wonderful
yeah.
to talk to both you ladies.
Yeah.
Have fun. See you soon, Merle.
Hey, thanks,
bye bye.
Okay. Take
bye.
Care. Thanks
bye.
For coming on.
Bye bye.
Okay.
So it's now it's you and me.
It's you and me, yep.
Well, quite interesting that Vermont tourism thing that I went to. Yeah, well.
Yes. Right.
Hello, does Manchester exist?
That's right. Well, and Manchester's alive and well. I mean, this week, oh, my gosh, Merle, this is. You know, this next 3 weeks, it's just nonstop here. This weekend we have antiques, and it's National Craft Week. It's National Arts and Crafts Week, as you may know. I don't know. But that really hits home in Vermont because we have arts and crafts festivals all over the state and antique shows because it's Vermont Antique Week as well. So, there's no shortage of things to do. And right here in Manchester, we have the Fall Arts and Crafts Festival. And then in Weston, we have an antique show. And then we also have an antique show going here. So it's, if you're into antiques, furniture, and leaves, this is your next 10 days. And we also have what's called Open Studio, which we have a couple of times a year here. And it's where all of our artisans throughout the state open their studios so you can watch what them making, whatever it is their craft is. So throughout the state of Vermont, there are 108 studios that this weekend will be open to the public. So if you're a potter, you have a sign out in front that says Open Studio, or if you're a painter, and it's really fascinating because you can, see a lot of people doing what they do that you wouldn't normally.
Oh, like Andrew Wild, our glassblower?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, the glassblower, sure. I mean, you know, he may not be on Open Studio because he really does his almost in his shop, you know, but that sort of thing, exactly. So the people who are furniture makers open their studios up. There's a guy in town who does nothing but bowls, and he'll be open. They're, you know, painters throughout. So, yeah, then it's fun. You know, it's fun to go and see those people and see and have them talk to you about how they do what they do. So
sure,
that's,
yeah.
108 of those are open throughout the state, and the state puts out a map for Open Studio, which you can get by going to vermontvacation.com. You can print that Open Studio map so that you can guide yourself.
What do you cover?
What do I cover?
Yeah, before Manchester.
From Manchester and the mountains. So we are everything from Arlington, as Paula said, where we live, which has a number of covered bridges and has Norman Rockwell's, you know, original studio where he did much of his work here, all the way up and over the mountains to both of our ski mountains, Stratton and Bromley, and into Weston, which is the home of the Vermont Country Store. So we have, you know, we have quite an area, 18 towns and communities, and we have the small villages, Manchester, which is the business hub of the region with the concentration of commercial establishments, our independent artisan stores, as well as some outlet stores, and the Hildene Museum. And we also have a wonderful art museum here as well. So lots of things to do.
You mean I missed the art museum? I didn't get
everything. You missed
everything?
The art center. I don't know why we missed the art center. It may have been a day that they were closed.
Oh, okay.
Probably
You're
the
right.
only reason, or we just ran out of time.
That could have been a possibility. Where
I
did
think
we go?
So.
I'm trying to remember. I remember going to the two mounds. I know we had breakfast, and then
had breakfast. We went up to Bromley. Then we drove over to Stratton, and then we drove down to Arlington alongside the Battenkill River and into Arlington, and where we saw the home that used to be Norman Rockwell's.
Right.
And Norman Rockwell painted 237, or painted, illustrated 237 of his covers of the Saturday Evening Post while he lived right here in Arlington. And just as a sidelight, this weekend, there are a couple of models townspeople that were Rockwell models. And these are folks who are, you know, advancing in age, because this was a long time ago, who are going to be at the Sugar Shack, which is a wonderful establishment that has some Rockwell memorabilia and some great maple syrup and cider donuts. And so they'll be there for people to visit with and interview. So it's, you know, fun.
That's what I
think.
Cider donuts.
Yeah. Cider donuts are the best. Yeah.
All right, you got to send me a box.
Okay.
I said I tasted everything, and I went, oh, no, I didn't get the cider donuts.
You didn't cider donuts.
Everything seemed to be maple syrup and goat cheese.
Right. Well, and sprinkled in between all of this stuff, you know, there are a lot of, this time of year, you have a lot of church suppers and leaf peeper barbecues and, you know, all of that kind of thing, because we have so many folks that come to Vermont over the next month to enjoy.
What I want to do to talk about is the two mountain resorts, because, like, they didn't seem to be pushed at the Vermont skiing thing.
Well, we have two very, you know, very distinct mountains. We have Bromley, which is the smaller of the two, but has, you know, terrific slopes, and they do lots and lots of programs for families and special things for the kids. And, you know, it has a real local following at Bromley. Most of our local folks go to Bromley on the weekends, and the schools actually hold their ski schools and their junior ski programs at Bromley during the week. So if you're lucky enough to be a kid in Vermont, on Wednesdays you get the afternoon off to go and learn how to ski. And all that takes place at Bromley Mountain. And Bromley is a sister mountain to Jiminy Peak in Massachusetts and Cranmore in New Hampshire. And then 10 miles away is Stratton, which is the bigger mountain with more trails and slopes, but also has a lot of folks who probably from your area have second homes. It's surrounded by large second home communities, condominium communities. So on the weekends during the winter, Thursday night on Route 7, you see quantities of people coming up to enjoy their second homes, ski at Stratton, maybe ski some at Bromley, come into Manchester. We have great restaurants. So it's it's alive all year round. Stratton, when we were up at Stratton, it was the quiet time. They were painting and fixing up, and they have a wonderful village there where they have restaurants and delis and music and places to eat and bar and so forth. So that really is humming when the season's going. And, you know, right now, once we get cold here, they'll start the making snow at all of these resorts at both Bromley and Stratton. So they'll, you know, by the 1st of December, they'll be ready to open.
Well, aren't they, wouldn't you say that they're the closest to New York City?
They are. They are the closest to New York City. We're 4.5 hours. Mount Snow as well is close. But, yes, we are the closest to New York City in terms of a Vermont ski area.
Why do you think then the others get pushed so much, like in, I guess, up in like that Burlington area, as I call it?
Well,
Stowe.
Stowe and Sugar Bush are, you know, north of here, and Jay Peak, certainly, way up almost to the Canadian border. Well, I think, you know, we push as hard as we can here, but a lot of people have been going to Stowe for a long time. Our mountains are 50 years old this year, and I can't tell you how old Stowe is, but I think it may be an older resort, but we think Stratton and Bromley are the places to go.
Is there, let's say, enough to do at either of them that if you don't ski?
Oh, sure. I mean, they have all sorts of things going on in terms of the village. They have music. They have, you know, programs for kids. If you don't ski, you'll find something to do. And if you don't find it there, you just come right down to Manchester, 10 miles down the mountain, and we have things going on. Our bookstore, which is the best bookstore in the country, really, called Northshire Books, has an author event almost daily. So you meet somebody who's written a book, you get to talk to them. They have kids programs. We have all sorts of kids things going on at our rec park here. So, yeah, both of our mountains have a lot going on for everybody.
Well, that's good to know, because we got to, feed that, of people going up there. And, because I was, curious as to, I'm listening to all the resorts that are, at this Vermont thing, and I'm,
mm-hmm.
I'm saying, these two mountains, they're close.
Well, I don't know why they weren't on the docket that day, but they're alive and well and doing great.
Well, I'm really glad to hear that there's places to go to. If you're going to, let's just say Stowe, how many hours is that from New York?
Well, that's another 3 hours from here.
Okay.
Easily. Yeah. So that begins a 6-hour drive, I would think, from where you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not like, I guess, now suppose if I came up to your area, if I did, I mean, you have to have a car, I guess, right?
Well, you can come as far as Albany on rail. If you took Amtrak to Albany Rensselaer Station, and then you would rent a car there and drive over an hour and 15 minutes. Unfortunately,
okay, so,
we don't have rail here yet. I mean,
oh, okay,
into
that's
Manchester.
What I was wondering.
Yeah.
How about
yeah.
Buses? No?
Buses, again, you go either to Williamstown, Massachusetts, or to Albany. Now, from Albany Airport, you can get a bus now to Manchester. It's a once-a-day bus. But.
Okay. So, in other words, that's the only – in other words, if you were to do that and then you got into Manchester, let's say somebody would – you know, wherever you're staying, they would probably hopefully come and pick you up.
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah, I was just kind of wondering about that.
I mean, someday we really hope to have rail right into Manchester because – we think many people in urban areas don't have cars. They don't need cars. You know, they can move around easily. And so we're missing those people that can't get to us by rail.
Why did I think there's a rail that goes through Vermont?
There is a train that goes up the other side. Goes up the New York side and then crosses into Vermont north of Rutland. So it's a ways up.
Oh, okay. By the way,
yeah.
Where is Snow Valley?
Snow Valley in Vermont?
Yeah. Oh, wait, Dover? Where's Dover?
Oh, Mount Snow.
Mount Snow.
Mount Snow is in, yes, Mount Snow is in Dover. Mount Snow is about 60 miles from here.
Oh, okay.
I just
saw something on the internet, I guess one of those social media
having
a murder mystery weekend.
Right. Well, and you know, we all try and do theme things so that, you know, we can draw different people. And, they may be having something like that. They've had a number of festivals. And Mount Snow is a nice, nice area as well. And they had a lot of damage from Irene, so they've been rebuilding their tourism in that area.
Mm. Oh, I forgot about Irene, right.
Yes, Irene just, excuse me, 3 years ago.
Right.
I think it's 3 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're so busy still dealing with Sandy down here.
Well, that's true. You know, and then, but in Dover, which is the hometown of Mount Snow, their Main Street stores were almost all impacted, and so they've had a major rebuild in that area.
Mm. Writing about Rockwell, because, you know, right here we saw that the studio, and I was trying to figure
right.
out, okay, so this is why this, because I was looking, why does Sugar Shack have this exhibit?
Sugar Shack had the exhibit actually when I came here, the studio, which you saw, was part of an operating bed and breakfast. It was part of the property that was called the Inn at Covered Bridge. And they had the studio open. But subsequent to that, the memorabilia which was there was really sold as a collection. And fortunately, the Sugar Shack stepped in and it kept it in Arlington, which was very, very nice. And so now it's on display.
Okay, so they bought the collection and and they're selling
correct.
Stuff.
Yes, they have prints and so forth. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Because then I was looking. There's also a Rockwell Museum in Vermont, in Rutland.
There's a Rockwell Museum in Rutland just outside Rutland, which I don't know that it's really connected firsthand to. I don't really know what they have in there. You know, I don't know if it's just reprints of things. I think the uniqueness of the Rockwell exhibit in Arlington is that he actually lived here and did much of his early work here. And as I said, there are townspeople now who were models for him as children. They were in many of his
illustrations. Oh, that's right.
Illustrations.
Because, yeah, I was going to say it.
Yes.
Right, the kids.
Yeah. Yeah, so they were very young kids then, and but many of them are still alive and living, you know, in the close proximity to Arlington, Vermont.
Well, so that must be cool having a, like, meeting.
Yeah, it is. It's very interesting, and they talk about how they remembered, you know, doing the sittings with him and what, you know, what he said to them and how, you know, just their remembrances of how it was to be part of the process.
That's cool.
And they sign autographs of some of the prints that they were part of, that kind of thing.
Well, that's, yeah. Okay, so that's on my list.
Okay.
On the list of what I haven't seen. See, I thought I saw everything.
Well, you can't see everything in just a couple of days, you know?
No, I guess I've got to go back.
You got to go back. Yeah, yeah. Well, I appreciate your letting me talk about it today.
Oh, yeah, because that's why I was, you know, in case I've been certainly writing about it, and I didn't want to make sure, like, go, you know, in terms of getting back there, because I know Equinox Resort and Spa invited us back to spend an evening.
Yeah, absolutely.
And which is, now, would you say that Equinox, and as opposed to the mountain, which I won't go on due to the height fear thing. Okay.
Go ahead.
Would you say that Equinox Resort is like the Plaza Hotel of New York City?
Yes, it is. And, it, you know, the history of that hotel is that, you know, it was the hotel that Mrs. Lincoln stayed in when she came here initially and had, you know, made plans to come back with then-President Lincoln for the summer. Unfortunately, he was assassinated, and so he never came to Manchester to the Equinox Hotel. But it's a very historic place. It's a beautiful place, as you know, and has, you know, been remodeled many times, but they've always had deference to the history of the property and the history of its place in history in our town. So it's really a gorgeous place.
Yeah, certainly is. I didn't get a chance to see all of it. Actually, Lori did the walking.
Yes.
The walking tour.
It's a 195-room hotel. And for people who might be listening, I mean, all of these things that we're talking about, you can find information on the website that is visitmanchestervt.com.
That's
our,
what I was going to ask, of course.
Yeah, that's the Manchester Chamber website. It has all of our lodgings. It has all of our restaurants, all of our attractions. And so that's where you can find out more about all of these things.
Oh, well, that's good. Actually, what was interesting, though, in terms of having gone to this particular event, is some products. And although they're not around Manchester, in other words, the companies may not be there, but for instance, there's a place that sells socks.
Yes, the socks market is no longer here, but there is the socks market in Stowe. They're associated with the Stowe Resort.
No, I think that they're, and I have to think of the company, though. Something, let me see here. But what had happened is that, because of, they're called Darn Tough.
Yeah, yeah, and they're up near Stowe.
And, but I noticed, I mean, I found out that, like, you can go into the, like, the Vermont store to buy these.
And buy them, as well, right.
Right.
That's correct.
And then the,
yeah.
And, let me see, there was some other things that, one of the things I thought was very odd, we were getting Keurig cups.
Right.
And I'm going, why in the world? Until I looked on the website and noticed, oh, they use the
Green Mountain
coffee.
Right, right.
Okay, so that's the association with that.
Right.
But the, and then there was another one. There was this company that sells these candles called, let me see,
we have a number of candle companies.
Aunt Sadie's.
Aunt Sadie's, yes, I've heard of them. I'm not sure where the town of manufacture is, but
what happened was that what we had gotten them as a goodbye gift from the Ira Allen house.
Ah.
And then I kind of looked it up, and then I noticed that you could buy them.
At the Vermont Country Store, maybe.
Old Vermont, and I think the bookstore too.
Okay, could
that
be.
That sells them.
Yeah.
So
people are passionate about carrying Vermont-made products. I mean,
yes,
they try very hard to buy local, and by buying local, not necessarily just Manchester, but buying local Vermont product.
Yeah.
So
I can understand. Matter of fact, Ron is going to send me some baked goods and candies.
Well, you can't go wrong there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Mother Myricks, is that it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that place is a hoot. I mean, that's
Well, they are a great asset to our community, and, I mean, they obviously sell what's called Vermont Butter Crunch, which is the best ever, and all of their Lemon Lulus and Lemon Lulettes and all sorts of other things. They have great, great, great. If you didn't get the hot fudge sauce, it's absolutely the best. And, they're local, and they do a lot of business on the Internet. And so, you know, wherever you are, you can order from them, and you can get their website address on our website.
That's true. Does he get everybody's website on
absolutely.
Yours?
Okay. I hate to cut this short, Merle, but I've got to go to a meeting. I'm sorry.
That's
foliage,
okay.
And I've got to go to a meeting. So ask me back another time. We'll talk more.
Okay. You got it. But I think we hit everything other than the people that I'll directly get in touch with.
Okay.
Okay. So have a great day. Thank you so much, Bert.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. So we're out of Vermont. We're back in New York. And I'm going to end this episode. So, everybody, as I usually say, have a nice day, evening, afternoon, whatever it is that you're listening to this now. Chicken's asleep.